Back, Triple P, Paul Pickett Podcast. I'm your host, the one and only Paul Pickett, aka the Common Sense Podcast, your source for music, sports, politics, world events, and much, much more. Today, I'm going to do an interview with Justin Logan from a band called Stunner. And before we do that, let me go ahead and punch in one of our sponsors.
For music marketing and promotion? Then look no further than Promo Palace LLC, your one-stop shop for all music promotion services. Services include Spotify playlist pitching, YouTube video promotion, record pool promotion, blog placements, radio airplay promotion, SoundCloud promotion, and much more. With over 2,000 customers and over 10 years of experience in online promotion, Promo Palace LLC is a company you can trust. For more info, please go to promopalace.biz. See you there.
That's right. You heard the beautiful lady. I don't need to say any more. Let's go ahead and bring in our guest.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, how you doing, Justin?
Doing good. Thanks for having me, Paul.
No problem. Let's start with a couple of the basics. How y'all come up with the name Stunner?
It's kind of based around the character that the point of view that the songs are all written from. So we, you know, more or less just kind of naming a band is really like maybe one of the hardest things to do. And it's kind of arbitrary in some ways. So we just kept kind of working on brainstorming things around, you know, the concept of the album and everything, and then sort of named it mostly after the album was written and everything too. So.
So y'all basically came up with your name after you came up with a whole album. Mm-hmm. And that's typically a different process, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, for sure. This isn't my first band, though. So, like, I know how difficult it can be to get the branding right if you don't know what your content is going to be, you know? So we had 2 years during the pandemic to really kind of take our time and do things the way we wanted to. So that's kind of a luxury in a way.
Don't you? Me personally, I think rock bands have, like, some of the best names for musicians, period. Like, it's just the names they come up with.
Yeah, like Slash or, you know, The Edge, things like that. It's really cool.
I've never really interviewed a band or like a singer from a band. So how do you get to the point of being passionate about playing an instrument first and foremost? I've never really been passionate about that.
Sure. So it's, you know, it's probably just like anything else. For me, it was sort of compulsory. I started playing instruments when I was 5, and I play like 20 instruments. So it's just something that I've always been immersed in, and something that's always been around me between my family or my friends and everything. So, but playing an instrument and becoming like an expert at an instrument are two different things entirely. So at a certain point, you either just become obsessed with it or your friends are based around it. You know, those are the things that happen genuinely. But yeah, so It's just a journey, man.
It's a discipline, I would think, too. I think it's not for non-disciplined people to try to learn how to play guitar or flute or even the drums. Like,
yeah, you got to be okay at sucking at something for a little while. But then all of a sudden, it'll just start clicking. You know, one day you'll be able to play things you never thought possible. So it's really a perseverance thing. Yeah.
Do all like people who play instruments, even like guitars, y'all all have to like read actual music, right? Opposed to like rappers. We just get beats and we just write rhymes and rap over them. We don't have to necessarily read music. Y'all all have to read music, right?
Not necessarily. I can't
read music,
but I rarely do. So what I would say is like it's the same as that flow state you get into, you know, if you're freestyling or something like that. It's similar to that. It's just like it's a different set of muscles that you're doing it with. You know what I mean?
So when you come up with a song with a guitar, you don't never really have to read music. You just basically come up with some kind of rhythm in your head.
Yeah.
Play it on your guitar.
Yeah. You know how like certain words sound good to say and like the order you say them in, all of that matters a lot. Like,
yeah,
you know, they just literally sound. It's kind of the same thing with instruments where, you know, like, If it sounds good to my ear and if it sounds good to my mind's ear, you know, then that's what you're going for. So
now maybe you could speak for the band members and yourself on this. Like when you start playing the guitar, are all y'all trying to be lead singers?
No,
as well.
No.
Like, where does that point come about where, like, you decide, okay, now I'm playing the guitar, but I could also be the lead singer?
I think it's like what the arrangement needs. So we try to keep the song at the center of everything and figure out how can we best express or convey the emotions that we're trying to put forward in this song, right? And so whatever needs to handle the melody at that time, and everything else just takes a backseat to that. So sometimes that's a drum, sometimes that's, you know, the bass even. But, you know, most generally in pop music today, in popular music at least, it's the vocal centric thing. So So we just kind of pass it around based on the arrangement usually.
Now, when I came up in the 80s and I was listening to like Def Leppard, Motley Crue and stuff, like, I noticed like all the band members would basically, you had the lead singer, but all the band members were kind of like ad-libbing and things of that nature. Is that still a heavy thing with band members?
It is in a lot of genres. It depends on what you're looking at. There's a lot of stuff that's really scripted. But, you know, I have a blues trio that I used to go around with, and we would improvise everything we did. And so it just varies, you know, based on the genre and what your specific show is set up like, you know.
Yeah. Now, how hard is it finding, like, three or four people on the same page?
Impossible.
It's impossible.
That's maybe the hardest part of the whole thing, man, is just, you know, like, the logistics of it all, getting the scheduling right and people that care the same amount that you do. That's the
biggest part, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you start adding more members and more members, like the it's something I always talk about when people talk about quality in the workplace. They always never bring up a quality of effort. Like, we all gotta, you know, want the same for it to really work. Now, you said this is your second band?
Yes, maybe so. I've toured with a lot of bands and done a lot of different, you know, things like that. So this is my second project that I've been at the helm of, I would say. So I usually have been like a hired gun in the past, just somebody needs a guitar player or somebody needs a drummer or something like that. So this is my second soiree as being the front man.
Have you ever done cover music?
Yeah, when we played those 3-hour bar gigs back in the day, I used
back to in the days. Covers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's like the beauty of a band, right? A rock band is that y'all can just, even when y'all don't got your own original content, you can just do cover music and still get gigs. Get like
some money. Mm-hmm.
You know, and rappers, it's so frowned on. Like, if you do cover music, it's like,
people think you're doing karaoke.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's not the same, you know.
And it's like, oh, you ain't write your rhymes, you ain't do this. And even today, when you can still, like, rappers could release cover music if they want, like on a Spotify, but they don't do it. They don't do it still.
I think that's probably like a genre kind of cultural thing within that genre. I produce quite a bit of hip hop too, and like, my favorite thing to do is,
yeah, I noticed that in your bio. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love to introduce hip hop artists to the live band experience, right? Like,
I love that. Yeah. Like, yeah. I think like Roots, that's what makes, like, I love the Roots because they just give you this different feel that you don't get with nobody else in hip hop. And I think Kendrick Lamar has done that before, yeah, if I'm not
Anderson
mistaken.
Pack is one of my favorites.
Anderson, oh, love Anderson Pop. I think that's a missing element in hip hop that needs to be brought in more. And I know it costs more, like on the touring aspect, you know, to bring a band on the road and whatnot for hip hop. But the shows are just so much better than somebody just getting up there and just rapping on stage. You know, I totally agree with you.
And that's why you see, you know, the guys at the highest level that are doing it most of the time when they're touring, it's with a band somewhere. You know what I mean? So it's interesting to see. I went and saw Wiz Khalifa not too long ago, and he had a band with him, bro. And I was like, okay, this is okay. Like, this top level is different, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. It's the key word you just said. When you add that band, you're putting yourself at that top level. You know, it takes it to a top level opposed to just a DJ, a microphone, and a rapper.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I love hip hop, you know, I've always thought doo-wop was like the most organic music ever to me, because I have a friend, his dad sung bass for the original Heartbeats, and like everybody in the group is the instrument.
Mm-hmm.
and whatnot. I was looking at a video you had. I want to get into this one, American Dream. I don't know how old it is.
It just came out maybe, I don't know. We just put that out on our first record in November, but I don't know how long old that video is.
What's the American Dream to you?
That song, it's kind of ironic, really, because that song has a commentary on inequality in America, especially wealth inequality in America. So Stun is definitely not a political band, but okay. That was one of the first songs we wrote around the project, and I was pretty pissed off at the way that things have been trending in this country. You know, I'm not really an equality of outcomes person, but I am.
Like, I'm the same way. I'm the same way.
Equality, yeah. Of opportunity is.
Yeah. Yeah. We agree. We agree.
You know what I mean? So yeah. just examining, you know, the landscape of this country and the divides that are happening and everything, and trying to figure out if there was a way to see some connective tissue in any of that, you know, and sort out if we're all mad at the same thing, we're still together. You know what I mean? So it's like, just trying to.
No, you're right. I like that. I might have to post that on Facebook. That makes a lot of sense. If we're all mad at the same thing, we're still together because we're all mad at the same thing. Now, even though you say the song was a political song, has anybody politicized it? You know, because even though you don't make something political, everything is politicized nowadays. Yeah. They politicize sports. Hollywood is so politicized with all the movies. And it scares me with this censorship because I don't want it to roll over into the music at all.
I can't say that I would care if somebody tries to do something like that to my music, then they can do that. I don't care. It's not going to affect me. I love to have a hater, bro. It makes me feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be. But my other thing is, like, I'm not going to ever write music out of a place of fear. And if I'm afraid to say,
I love
something,
that.
You know what
I
mean?
Love that. It's
like, my voice isn't going to get taken out by somebody. Now they may not, it may cause me to be heard less, but that's not going to make me less authentic. You know what I mean?
I like that. I like that. Do you think, like, because I know a cat like Luke fought hard against the Supreme Court for this whole censorship. Do you think it's going to flood over into the music when they're censoring people like Kanye for things that he's saying outside of the music?
It looks like it.
I mean, they've censored him, like, all his business dealings. I don't know why they would, like, just say, oh, we're going to stop it, not, you know, at the music. We're still going to let him make a lot of money off of music. I don't like where it's going with that, because music is like, you know, if you start censoring music, you got to start censoring everything. Everything. Comedy, mm-hmm. You got to censor art, you know, like just paintings and stuff like that.
And art exists at the cutting edge of culture. So whatever the brand new thing that's happening, that's where art is made, you know. And if you start taking away our ability to live on that cutting edge and watering it down, then you're going to, first of all, you're going to have a boring ass population. You know, second, you're going to get, you know, the destruction of people's integrity and what makes them really artists. I think it's important, you know, like you set up a business and you have an LLC that separates you from the liability for all.
You know what
I mean? I think that I have like a similar compartmentalization when I do art. Like I listen to Michael Jackson records all the time, man. And like in person, who knows? I didn't know him personally, but you know the stories. And so, but that doesn't affect my ability to listen to his art and to appreciate, you know.
And a lot of people feel that same way about R. Kelly, too.
Yeah.
Like, because he made,
it's not my
business
what he did in his private time.
And to be, you know, to be fair, like, that was a common thing in Roman and Greek history, you know, all that stuff. You know, it's just now that we look at things, you know, we just stray so far. I'm a laws of nature guy, and I just think we stray so far from our animalistic natures. We just try to act like we're just getting more civil and more civil and more civil and more civil. And we're just basically taking away everything that's natural to who we are. You know, you had this performance. Was it a local news station?
Yeah. That was on.
Now, how'd you set that up?
I reached out to them. Through a mutual friend, I had met somebody, you know, I go to things and network as much as I possibly can. That's the name of the game.
Like for other artists, like how would they, you know, like go about getting on like a local news, their local news network like that?
So the best thing to do is to to either meet one of their sales reps out in the wild or to figure out who that is yourself and get a hold of them and figure out if they have like a local feature. Sometimes you got to pay to be on there. Sometimes you don't. Okay. It just depends. But like, you know, if you develop a relationship with the salespeople that are selling those spots, which they all are.
Like the ad sales reps? Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they'll have some, you know, 20-something-year-old kid doing it usually. But it's good to build those relationships. And you know, they know people too. So that's my thing.
Now, you had to do that without the band. They weren't able to get there at that time?
Yeah. At the time, I was living in about 4 hours away from the rest of the guys. And okay. So that happened to take place on a day when they just couldn't make it over there. So, you know.
Does that ever cause friction?
I wouldn't say friction so much as just like difficulties in logistics. It can be hard to maintain a creative momentum if you don't get to at least play once a week with each other, you know. So
Yeah. And typically when you do these solo joints like that and they can't make it, you always do acoustic?
Yeah, usually. I mean, I've tried to do backing tracks and stuff before, but I like to make all the noise that I can myself. I think it makes it more authentic kind of feeling for my sound specifically, you know.
What you mean, like acoustic? You think acoustic's more authentic?
Yeah, an electric guitar.
I do too.
Sounds weird by itself and a voice to me.
Yeah, I think acoustic, when you're just by yourself, acoustic is just as organic as it really gets, right?
Yeah, and it makes more percussive noise, you know, so it's easier to, like, put a little bit more out in the soundscape that way.
Okay, we actually just got, there's a liquor I promote, we just actually got put out there in Oklahoma recently. It's called Dizzle Brand. What's life like out in Oklahoma, a.k.a. Soonerland?
You know, it's what people think it is, man. It's Wild West out here.
It is what we think. I'm
not riding horses to Walmart or nothing, but you
know. I get that. Nah. But like, I thought Alabama was what I thought it was, and it's not really what I thought it was. So Oklahoma is really what we think it is.
There's a lot of art that comes out of this place. You know, I think that there's a parallel between how much art comes from a place and how difficult it is to live there. So Oklahoma definitely has its fair share of like some bad things, but it's got a lot of good, man. It's got great people here, and the art scene is popping a little bit in Oklahoma City and Tulsa. You know, it's getting there.
Is that where you're at in Tulsa right now?
I'm closer to Oklahoma City.
It says the band is from Ada, Oklahoma. How big of a, that sounds like a little town.
Yeah, it's about 15,000 people.
Okay,
Blake Shelton's from here.
That's like the town next to Fayetteville, North Carolina. It's called Hope Mills, and it's like, they literally don't want to call themselves Fayetteville, but they're pretty much part of Fayetteville. Yeah, they only got like 14,000 people and whatnot. Because I'm from a military town. And so we kind of got like a lot of military mindset, you know, and whatnot. We actually live under the mindset of knowing that if the enemy was going to drop the bomb, this would be the first city to really go. Strategically, it'd be the smartest thing to go.
That's so how y'all know about OKC too, because they got a big Air Force base up there.
Oh, y'all got a big Air Force base out there. Okay. Is there any big artists out of Oklahoma that I don't know about?
I mean, my favorite Okie artists are probably like Kings of Leon.
They're from there?
Okay. Yeah, they're from Tallahena. So their dad was a traveler.
And that's a small town?
Yeah, it's real small. There's a funny documentary about it, actually. It's like a family reunion they go to, and everybody looks exactly like you think they do. It's pretty good.
And how old are you, actually?
I'm 32.
You're 32. And how long you been making music?
25 years, probably.
25 years. So you've been, you were doing the instrument thing since you were a little kid, you said, right?
Mm-hmm. And your family makes instruments.
So he makes instruments. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was trying to get down to. It's like, parents don't really buy their kids instruments like they used to back in the days, or really try to get their kids into playing instruments. I remember when I went to high school, it's like you always had these kids where their parents is renting instruments and whatnot. So your father makes instruments from like by hand?
Yeah. So my papa, my mom's dad, he was really into like Appalachian instruments like the dulcimer and the banjo. And it just so happens the dulcimer is a real easy instrument to learn for a kiddo. Yeah. So I started that when I was about 5, and then drums when I was 8, guitar when I was 12. And the reason for that is because of the, like you're getting at the availability of the instruments, right?
Yeah.
Like my ability to get my hands on them and get familiar with them while my brain is still able to take in so much information. I think that was a really vital part of me getting a successful instrumental career. And so,
did your father play the instruments too, or just make them?
My papa made and played all of them. He was a really good musician, and he exposed me to incredible professional musicians at a very young age. So I got to see how things worked, you know, from the jump.
You never got into the instrument making aspect of it?
I have recently a little bit, but I was always just obsessed with playing music so much. That's all I ever did. I mean, yeah. I never even thought about woodworking until this year.
So you're basically like me. Where would your life be without music?
I wouldn't. I'm an obsessive man. That's all I do.
So. I mean, what do you think you would be doing if you weren't into music?
Maybe an engineer.
I'd probably be dead or in jail.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine me doing anything else. I really couldn't. It's like I wasn't tall enough to make it on basketball. I wasn't big enough or fast enough for football. I ran track, but I ran long distance, and it wasn't like.
And you can't make any money after you're in your 30s at that point.
Yeah.
It's like,
Yeah.
That's all that's ever been for me. It's never been a question of what I was going to do. It's just how's it going to come together has always been my question.
So what's the goals of the band? Everybody always like, I want to get a record deal, but like,
I don't want a record deal.
Staying independent and actually having a certain amount of fans, it just seems like the most beautiful thing in the music business, especially when you're talking about you bringing labels. You know, you don't control all the music being put out there. They could tell you, oh, you can't release music. They try to push these singles over certain singles.
Take your whole career from you.
They try to take over your masters from day one. They just with the 360 deals, it's like there's certain aspects they don't even invest into that they're getting paid profits back on.
Those are loans. Those are not records.
Yeah,
those are loans. I think the longer you can wait to sign a deal, if at all, the better. I have some friends that are really, really successful in music. And these guys sell like $400,000 worth of merch every 10 days. You know what I mean? Like they're popping on the music thing. And they didn't sign. They recently signed with Columbia, but they didn't sign with Columbia until they already had their enterprise built. And they were able to sign a lucrative deal with them where they didn't get control of anything except, you know, distribution and publishing. And they only got like less than 50% of that. So they controlled their own destiny in waiting so long to sign, because what it is, man, a record label is not going to take a chance anymore. The days of taking a risk on a band are
over. Yeah. Or no artist, period. It don't matter what genre. No,
that's right. And so the days of guests like wild.
Oh, signing you because you're just talented is over. It's over.
So is this other guy, and he's got his business already built. So
yeah,
like, they're just buying sure things.
But I look at 90s hip hop and I sort of don't blame them somewhat for that. Cause first of all, you got more artists making it on their own two feet. And then you had in the 90s, they were just signing everybody cause
you spit
a certain amount of bars and 16 bars, we're signing you and you we put out like an album. And they don't recoup. They don't go gold. You might sell 100,000 copies and you're on just a major label. And that's like not major label thinking. They want gold or platinum or better, you know? So anything less than that it's not cutting it. Do you think the music business is better now today or was better when the distribution actually had value?
It depends on how you look at it. I think that there's merit to both sides of that.
I do too.
I think that right now with the streaming economy being what it is, you know, the royalties money is weird right now.
It is.
But you also have more access to more people than ever in history.
You do.
You can get yourself in front of people. You can, if you grind, you can really get yourself.
Even more than the distribution back in the days was giving you, because you still had to have the street team and radio to go along with that.
Who could afford radio?
Yeah, but major labels.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's still out to this day, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you think have to get in there and claw your way in if you want to get on a syndicated radio station for sure.
So you think artists go about it the wrong way of like trying to get the label as an investor and instead of looking at a actual businessman who's not really into music as an investor? Because I've seen it happen for artists before, you know, where they just get an investor out of nowhere. And even though the things didn't go right with the investor, you know, he got what he got out of this lot of money that was thrown his way. I mean, I've seen $20,000 video out of nowhere.
That's a better situation to me. I think I think that the angel investors, like they call it.
I call
them sugar daddies. You can call it whatever you want.
Sugar daddies. I like that word.
But those guys are everywhere. There's fans of music that want to invest in it everywhere. And I think that that's a smarter strategy than slanting yourself toward the labels, because all you're getting with the label really is someone that knows a good network, someone that's good at PR, and someone that's really good at marketing.
Are they really good at PR nowadays, though?
Who knows what that even is anymore?
Like, you're right. Who knows what that is with internet companies? Like, I never call myself a PR company, because, like, real PR is, like, you getting people out there doing real interviews. Like, not just this podcast, hundreds or more, you know.
All day long.
Interviews, magazines, all that. You know, nowadays they be like, I got you a few blog placements. I pitched you to some playlists, on PR. You know, I'm not naive to say, like, call myself PR. I like to call myself a music marketing and promotion company.
Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing you can do, though, is have good promotion and
someone
that knows the avenues to help you get your music out to more people is the thing. Because, you know, we all spend so much time learning how to do our craft at the highest level that we can, that a lot of us skip the marketing, you know, and it's everything, man. It's everything.
I think I stress it.
40% of this thing.
Two parts, making music and breaking music. And most artists don't know the breaking music part, or do they care about it? They don't even care about it. They just like, oh, I'm gonna make music and everybody's supposed to like it.
They think that they're just gonna like it automatically, and that's just not how it works.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not, because it's like a 10% rule, and it's actually less than that. It's usually just 2-3%. I like to go off the 10% rule and whatnot. So we actually agree on a lot of things. Like, artists should just get an investor. And then even if you want to sign with a label after that, investor both. Your investor could get his chunk.
Then you don't need their money. And so
you don't need their money. They get their profit margin off of what they invested, get their percentage, and y'all go both ways. Yeah. Happy, you know.
Then you get to use their marketing and stuff without having to pay back $1 million of an advance that they gave you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that's all that stuff is a loan, man.
Now, you said those guys, they make $400,000 every week of merchandise?
Every 10 days.
Wouldn't you say merchandise is like the biggest aspect of an independent artist nowadays? It's even more important than the music?
It's the easiest way to monetize your brand. It's the most accepted way that we have.
Accepted way. That's the key word, accepted way. Because
that's the main thing. And if you want a tour, you have to sell t-shirts. Like, you have to sell merch. That's just the way it is.
And I've actually seen groups like Griselda. You familiar with Griselda?
Mm-hmm.
They've actually used the merch to make the music pop.
Yeah, for
and,
sure.
And that's the thing. Design. Like, don't more artists need to kind of do that too? Like, use... Yeah. The merch as the main thing that you're pushing, and then promote the music also behind that, and let the t-shirt sell your music. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one hand washes the other too, because the music can sell the t-shirts, but I think the t-shirts can really sell your music more than the music can sell the t-shirts.
And you get a billboard out of every single person that wears one. Put your name on it. You know what I mean? Then somebody's going to go, okay, who's that? What's on that shirt? And it's like someone's paying to advertise for you. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's the future plans of your band? Like, new albums, new singles, or
we got a bunch of new music. We're about to go into the studio and start hashing out the second record. We're going to be doing some touring later this year. We're just kind of setting up the logistics of all of that. So for now, we're just tightening everything up, making sure everybody's good and getting out into our region. So that's what it is.
Okay, I'm looking at your album title, and I get it now. Solid Gold. Like, how'd y'all come up with that title, though?
It's a track. It's later on the album. There's a track called Solid Gold, and we thought that just summed the whole thing up really well. It's the worst sounding song on the record, but you know, the meat and potatoes of the song is
at least you're honest.
Yeah. Oh yeah, man. I'm as objective as I can be with myself.
Okay. I'm looking at some of your song titles here. Finer Things, Tyrant. What's that about, man? What's Tyrant about?
That's our first single. And it's,
please tell me that's about Justin Trudeau.
Yeah, I mean, it might as well be. He has a narcissist living inside of him than it is.
Okay, so you actually somewhat political in your music, though.
Yeah, I just try to examine the human condition, man.
Yeah.
Like, and politicians are just obnoxious humans. You know what I mean? So it's like...
They are.
You can just look into ourselves and see a little bit of them if we look hard enough. So I've just been... Like,
yeah, are we naive to think that, like, politicians should be clean and this, these honest guys, like... They literally, it's the dirtiest game, one of the dirtiest games there is. They throw mud at each other all day long. And we act like they're supposed to be clean. And then it's like, people like me and you, I've never really actually gave money to a politician. But if I did, I'd be giving like $5 or $10.
Yeah.
I think I'm naive to think that my agenda is going to come first before the guy who's gave $500,000 or $5 million or even... 5,000 or 50,000. It's
that money is going to corrupt you. I don't care who you are. You know what I mean? You can hold out as long as you want to, but in my opinion, greed is more powerful than our notion to do good. So it's tough to be like that, but you know what you want is for them to hold on and to stay true to themselves. But it seems like it's impossible in that situation with that much power and money around you.
Is there any politician that you see out there today that you think might be honest?
Bro, Bernie was pretty dope.
You know, it's funny you say that. I always said that, you know, because they're always Republican and Democrat this. I said they need to just let Rand Paul and Bernie go at each other because this is
at least will tell the truth.
Yeah, because Rand Paul is technically if I'm not mistaken, a libertarian going as a Republican because libertarians don't get votes and nobody goes by libertarians. Yeah. And Bernie's a communist or socialist or whatever that is a Democrat but really isn't a Democrat because nobody's really voting for what he does. So and I even
like,
seen
kept him from getting elected in the whole thing, so it was like,
and like, I even really seen in UK where they used to have a communist party back in the days.
Yeah, and I'm not a communist by any measure, but I do
mean either
should have single payer health care, and I don't think that that's a crazy thing to
is
say.
Is that a communist thing? What is
it's
that?
A socialist principle.
It's a socialist thing. Is there a difference between communist and socialism?
Yeah, so socialism is more like the government owns the means of like doing health care or you know doing universities and stuff like
that. Kind of like Canada with okay. Yeah,
Canada's a socialist country.
Okay, so there's still considered a socialist country.
Security, you know what I mean?
So, okay, yeah, yeah.
That's socialism, so
is it what you throw in the welfare things as well, too?
Yeah, that's a government provision. That's a social program.
What they call, I think they call them nowadays entitlement programs.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't really love the wording of that. You know what I mean? It's like...
I don't either. I hate when they add certain... They always add these words to things.
They try to make it a pejorative, and I don't like when people... you know, clown on different people for their hardship. You know what I mean?
Now, you knowing a little bit more about communism and socialism, like the meanings, I can't figure out why the regular person would volunteer for this. I hear, like, you hear what you hear from all these people coming from all these communist countries fleeing.
Yeah, they're fleeing.
And there's no other country, like, nobody's fleeing to run to China, fleeing to run to Russia. You see Brittany Griner was... She's an anti-American, and she was begging to get home,
mm-hmm.
You know. And yeah, I agree she shouldn't have been locked up for what she was locked up. Because my stance on marijuana is it should be decriminalized and legalized. But she blatantly just said, hey, screw American laws, screw Russian laws. And she actually had to fly in between Russia and America.
And they knew
and had broke their laws as well.
She was going to get leveraged if she did.
But I still can't see why the average person will volunteer for this.
I think it's something to do with indoctrination as you're being raised. So if you're raised around it or else your environment, you know, and some people are a lot more susceptible to it because they want to be accepted by someone, anyone, you know, So sometimes you can just kind of fall into it that way. But, you know, I love this country. I think this is an incredible country, and I don't want to change it so drastically that we, you know, lose our freedom. And I'm a patriot at the end of the day.
Well, but I think what people fail to realize,
bankrupting people is ridiculous, dude.
I think what people fail to realize is we're like one of the youngest countries ever. We still don't know what it can be or truly supposed to be. It's still like an experiment, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, like everything, like I think about before America, like there was no feminist movements super heavy like that. I mean, some of these countries were giving women like rights to vote, but like a lot of this stuff
all recently, though, you know,
yeah, feminist movements, transgender movements. I don't remember like civil rights going on in Europe like that before America. Lord. There's just, you know, this gender pay gap, you know, which has been like a myth. Like the worst explanation of the gender pay gap is the WNBA and NBA. I really hate when they,
yeah,
like they're not really,
that's not a fair comparison,
honest. They're not honest about it and whatnot.
Well, my thing with that is like you just look at a business to business model and figure out, it's like people should be, if people were paid based on merit, then it would make a lot of sense to me, but they're just not. They're paid based on how much money they have the potential to make for a company. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
or their usefulness is and stuff like that. And so I don't know, man, the way that we compare, you know, one of my favorite quotes is from Theodore Roosevelt, and he said, comparison is the thief of joy. And that, I mean, that's how I operate my life. I only compare myself to myself yesterday.
And you said that was from who?
Theodore Roosevelt.
It's funny you say that. He's my favorite president of all time because he went after the monopolies, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't be self-employed today. He did something that truly benefits me today, you know? And 100 I can't think years. Of anything that a president has done that really affected me personally. You know,
your ability to make money, make your own living, and earn your own way, right?
And I love the story behind that because it backfired on like Rockefeller and Carnegie because mm-hmm. they bought their little president. I think it was William McKinley.
Yep.
And he basically made Theodore Roosevelt the vice president because that's where politicians went to die back then. And the second term, he got assassinated by. A regular common person because he wasn't for the people. He was for 5-6 billionaires or the monopoly owners. Yeah. And as soon as Theodore Roosevelt came in, he
said, get out of here with that.
I mean, he went after them guys, man. And, you know, instantly.
He made it hard to overturn it, too. He made it where Congress had to vote very, like a higher than majority vote to overturn.
And they said, Rockefeller was on the like, just traveling across the world the last years of his life, just trying to flee, you know, going to court and whatnot. But I mean, he literally went after all of them. And yeah, if it wasn't for
a brave man to do that,
we'd really be a screwed country right now. Mm-hmm. If he didn't do what he did,
it'd be just more advanced than it is now with the capitalism thing, you know? And like I say, man, I'm a capitalist all the way, but like monopolies are bad news.
Monopolies are bad news. Okay, I'm glad you bring that up. Do you think there's actually legal monopolies going on when you look at a place like Facebook, who owns Facebook and Instagram?
Well, look at a
place and like what WeChat too now.
And so, like a monopoly to me doesn't mean the only business that exists in that.
That's what it used to be.
Right. That's what it used
but
to
now
be.
It's more like you just, it's kind of like Google
a market share that is unshakable. And
that like Google owns Google and YouTube and nobody's going to compete with Google and YouTube on the search engine aspect. I mean, you got AOL and Yahoo and Bing and they have no chance.
No, those are just advertising platforms at this point.
That's all they are. They nobody's really going to search on Bing.
No.
Nobody's going to YouTube. Nobody's going to AOL. They always go to Google. Now, let me ask you this. What's your take on something like TikTok for musicians?
I don't have it on my phone. You can call me paranoid or whatever, but like the U.S. government doesn't allow their employees to have it on their government devices.
You're a U.S. government employee?
No, but I just think that if they don't allow them to have it, then they're probably taking a lot more data than you think. Like, in the terms and conditions in TikTok, it says that like every keystroke on your phone is logged and stored in there. And then, you know, it's just a little too close to the Chinese government for me. But if you don't want to be tinfoil hat like me, like our band still has one, and I let them run it all, and that's fine. I don't care, but like, I just don't want my stuff being taken advantage of, you know.
I agree with you 1,000%. This is the only problem I have. I've been doing promotion since the MySpace days,
and it's the best promotion aspect, like that exists right now.
This is the thing I realized about TikTok that was so different. I remember only having like 100 followers and getting like 70,000 views in like 24 hours. Well, I was first trying to get on, I had a friend and a good mentor of mine. Shouts out to Chris Roker. Be like, yo, we need to learn TikTok. When he says we, he means me.
You.
So I get on him like, nah, man, this is some kiddie stuff. This is some kiddie stuff. He's like, I'm telling you, man, TikTok Triller. We need to learn it. It's a new thing for music promotion. So I'm like, all right, you saying it is. You're my friend, mentor. I got to listen to you. I give it a shot. I get my 70,000 views. I start scratching my head.
And try to repeat it.
Well, I actually had other videos get good traction. Mm-hmm. But they'll shadow ban you because I started getting political on there. And people are sensitive. But this is the one thing I realized about TikTok that is different from all other platforms. You cannot bot every single aspect of TikTok.
No.
You can't bot those dance challenges and stuff. Like, you get into Instagram, you could bot every aspect, mm-hmm. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube.
They're all faceless actions, right?
Yeah, any engagement you can think on there, you can bot. And that's why people are always like, you know, it's – I ain't gonna lie. It's hard to know who's bots and what's not bots if you really don't know, because even bot guys – that's the thing. There's a right way and a wrong way to do everything. And no matter what you're doing, even in a bot world, there's a right way to do it and a wrong way. And the right way is they can make it look gradual and organic.
Yeah, where somebody's stuff isn't getting taken down because of you, right?
Getting taken down, and you'll never really truly know. And yeah. I would argue, let me ask you this. What do you think the percentage of Spotify playlists are that are bots outside of Spotify's playlists?
Probably greater than 50%.
Greater than 50%.
And that's me being paranoid about it, but I mean,
I think you're underselling it.
Yeah, maybe so. Here's what I think you're underselling. Any of them that have more than say 5,000 listeners, the percentage of those that are bought it is higher than 50%, probably.
You know why? And why do you think that is? I think I know why that is.
Because it's an easy way to jumpstart things from the beginning.
No, but why do you think there's so many botted compared to like, why there's more than 50%? Like Apple Music's probably not more than 50%.
Well, yeah, and because Spotify makes it pretty social. You know what I mean?
You know what I think it is? Because playlisters don't have no influence.
No, they don't. That's fair.
And so yeah. I think they have no choice but to bot. It's really what I think it is.
And that's maybe a robbery of platform more than it is, you know, them not having any clout or whatever.
Well, yeah, it's the platform. No,
but
you're right. It's
the way that they're leveraged is not fair, really.
You're right. It's the platform that you can't engage. You know, if you can't engage with people, you can't really
have no relationship.
Yeah, you have no influence. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing Spotify still doesn't get. And that's why I think Spotify knows it. I think the music business knows it. Everybody knows it, but they really don't care.
And then they want to complain but not do nothing about it. It's like, okay, then.
Well, I've heard the rumor that they actually make fake artist accounts to get royalty payouts.
I would believe it, man. I mean, I would absolutely believe that.
You know,
they take so much money. I mean, their CEO is a billion. And I'm not talking – I'm glad for the opportunity to have Spotify. But here's how I use Spotify, man. Spotify is a way to get people to my shows. I don't plan to make any money off of it.
Yeah.
I just use it to know where to book shows and know where to find my fans. You know what I mean?
Because
if you want to make money off of Spotify, then you're going to be a long time waiting.
It's just an extra thing to have. It's like, it's not really the thing. And that's the thing I think most artists have a disconnect on. They're so caught on Spotify royalties. They don't understand that's not the place to build fans.
No. No, it shows is the place.
Shows, you know, is still always going to be the number one spot for fan building.
And we used to book tours to promote an album, and now we release an album to promote tours. So it's all flip-flop because of the way that the royalties are paid now. You know what I mean? So
And it's so much easier to get the shows. I know a guy getting 80 to 100 shows every year out of Alabama, ex-military, shout out PBE Pluto. But I like his formula, how he does it, because he gets his deposit. He puts that into advertising, and he advertised locally the show and everything. And what he does is he focuses on trying to get four local artists to pay him for a feature.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah,
get
so
fans to come to that show too.
So by the time he leaves, he got his second half of his deposit. He might sell some merch. Then he'll get two to four features, and he's charging $1,000 a feature.
And like you say, getting the overlap of the local artist fans to come in that he wouldn't have otherwise been able to connect with. And so he's got like so many different benefits of that model. I really like that model too.
Yeah, I do
too.
I
think to collaborate. I think anytime you can collaborate with other musicians and mix your fans together.
Yes.
Like that's one of the best things you can do for your career.
Isn't that why you pay for features when you pay for features? Are you trying to tap into their fans?
Yeah, you're trying to get some of their fans to be your fans too. Because likely they will be if you're in the same genre.
What's your opinion about, I don't know if this is heavy in the rap business, but what's your opinion on like paying to open up for somebody like a Kings of Leon?
That used to be the only way to do it, man. Anymore, you know, the labels and the bands get a lot more decisions in it than it used to be. But back in the day, like I've toured with plenty of bands that bought onto tours, you know, and it was the only way to get your foot in the door back in the day.
Well, they said that's how Tech N9ne bought onto the Insane Clown Posse tour.
I believe that. And that actually makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. And when you talk about a fanatic of a tour,
that would have been insane.
That's a fanatic of a tour.
Yeah.
And isn't that why independent artists are so much like better than majors? Because their fans are actually fanatics.
Yeah. And
is it safe to say mainstream fans are not really fanatics?
They're like spoon-fed fanatics, man.
Yeah.
That's what I think of it as. It's like, you know, they're mainstream fans. Like, there's a lot of good music in the mainstream, and it's been crafted to be catchy and be really good. But I think that your most diehard fans are in your niches. So the best thing you can do is find your niche market, figure out what your subgenres are, and then find where those people exist on the internet or local shops, whatever, and promote yourself through those, because that's where you'll get people that give you actual engagement, as opposed to just getting somebody that listens to your song because it's on a playlist every once in a while, you know?
Yeah.
You want somebody that will come to your show and buy some merch. Like, that's your best fan.
We almost hit the hour mark. I'm going to get a couple more questions. It's subgenres. I want to touch on that. Do you think every band should, like, have subgenres?
I think every artist should try to find a subgenre that they fit into.
Every artist. Every genre, right?
Every artist. Hip-hop has a million subgenres. You know what I mean?
They
might not be named as specifically as they are in rock and roll, but you can find people that talk about it in such a way where you can squeeze those subgenres out of it.
Hip hop seems more less reluctant to tap into other subgenres. Like hip hop, they always like seem like certain cats want to put their music in a box and act like they're selling out if they do certain things. Like Styles P did the Akon record, and he didn't really want to do it. But as a fan, I don't know any fan that was really disappointed.
No, it's impressive to see like how strong of a writing you can do. And you don't got to stay that way forever. Like, we're always changing as artists. Our writing styles are going to change with our voice. So my thing with it is like, what it does is it allows you to segment your audience where you can make sense of your data and you can make sense of what you're trying to get to and who you're promoting to, so that you can get your copyright, so that you can get your branding right in general. You know what I mean? So
see, when I look at the subgenre right there, I think some people look at it like you might be disappointing the fans you already have, but I look at it, it's more like you're trying to tap into a whole nother set of fans.
Yeah.
And your fans that shouldn't really be upset at you tapping into the subgenre if they don't like the subgenre. Just focus on the music that I'm making, the genre that you like.
And they're gonna be stoked that you're releasing music no matter what, man. If you're making excellent music, the style of it, you know, can change. It doesn't matter as long as that excellence is there.
Do you think, what genre do you think has the most originality right now?
Right now?
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of like, hooligan rock, like some hooligan rock has been really cool.
What is that?
It's like a British,
like British hardcore, pop rock, hardcore, or British hardcore rock,
like
or hardcore, something.
But just like Idols, the band Idols is my favorite one right now, and they're pretty interesting because it kind of combines the spoken word elements of like hip hop and some of the vernacular of it too, with like rock and roll elements. So it's cool.
What's your take on heavy metal? I really can't get down with heavy metal.
That's a lot of notes for one song usually, but you know, like I understand the appeal for some people. I understand the emotional pull of it. I just don't like how like inundated the whole thing is with notes sometimes. But
what do you mean inundated?
They're just like, they try to squeeze a lot of notes like fast.
Oh,
fast
too much into it.
Yeah. And sometimes that can be a little distracting from the point for me. That's my opinion.
Maybe you could tell this for me, like a historical thing, like, cause I got a poster on my wall, the guy who they say invented heavy metal, Jimmy. Why is it, what happened where this shift came from what Jimmy made and invented to this gothic, I'm painting my nails and roar? Man, like, where did that shift come from?
I think that you can observe this in every genre. So, and we'll see it in hip hop too. In fact, you can already see it in hip hop a little bit when you start seeing, you know, some of the different like digital genres that are happening with it. People just take things to the extreme. And so the longer something exists, the more extreme it will get at the outlier. You know what I mean?
That's okay,
what I
think that makes sense. Because I always never understood that. Like, if Jimi Hendrix invented heavy metal, why is nothing today sound like anything he did?
Yeah. You know,
it's and just all
like
this.
Digital recording changed the game too. You know what I mean? Because like back then he was having.
You're talking about from analog to digital?
Yeah, uh-huh. And being they able say to that track. Mm-hmm.
So you think that was the downfall of some things?
It was the evolution for sure.
Evolution. Because a lot of people said that's what made RZA's beats not be as good no more. Is he was making these analog beats and then he went digital. And Bobby Digital. And it just wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't the same. You lost that thing that made Wu-Tang Wu-Tang.
Well, to me, it's like he just switched tools. He switched tools.
He just switched tools.
And he didn't know how to use the new tools the same way as his old ones. You know what I mean? So that's what I think it was.
He wasn't mastered in it yet. Anything you want to get say on the podcast? Get out the way or whatnot?
Go follow Paul Pickett. You know what I mean? Go ahead and make sure that you follow Stunna online. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Okay. And we could do another interview too. I actually never really did an interview with multiple people yet. So cool. I was kind of looking forward to.
Yeah.
I was hoping you would have had that another band member on today to do like a three-way screen kind of thing because I never really did one of them.
They can remote in, right?
Yeah. Like we'll you can send that. Anybody the invite link. Every invite link is only unique to this specific episode.
Okay.
But you can send it anybody and whatnot. And I think I could do up to about 10, 12 people. So, okay. I mean, we could actually do
we
all the band members.
Yeah,
at once. And you just let me know what your schedule's like and whatnot. Yeah.
Let's pop that next week if you're available, man.
We can make it happen, man.
All right.
We can make it happen, man. All right, man. I appreciate you coming on the Paul Pickett podcast, man.
Yeah.
Justin Logan, the band Stunna, Oklahoma.
We'll see y'all later. Thanks.
All right. Peace.
Peace.
You heard it. Interesting conversation. I've never really interviewed a rock band member or rock band at all. I've always been interested in the music making process of rock and roll and how somebody really get passionate about making music on guitars and things of that nature. Cause I knew it always had to be a discipline. It's not so much a discipline in hip hop and rapping as it is. Now DJing is more of a discipline. It's more of an art and producing and things of that nature, but it's not even really that much of a discipline, like playing guitars and instruments, man. Like, cause everybody starts out like crap. Everybody starts out like crap. And process is longer than others to get good and better, and some don't even get good or better. But yeah, check next week. We're going to try to have the whole band on. Listen to them at stunnerband.com. Follow them on Instagram. You see it scrolling below. Thank you for tuning in, Paul Pickett Podcast, and I'm out.